Hello, welcome to the Heart of the Piano podcast. I'm Bob Rose, and it's already time for the new ABRSM piano syllabus. So because of the worldwide popularity of ABRSM exams, the pieces contained within these pages are what multitudes of piano teachers are now going to hear to death until the next syllabus appears 2 years from now. So this is always a big event in the piano teacher's calendar. I've spent over 3 weeks, almost 4 weeks, becoming familiar with all the pieces in the new books, comparing them against previous syllabuses and other examination boards, and learning all the pieces in the book starting with grade 8. I'll be releasing tutorials and performances of these grade 8 pieces on YouTube very soon, so do subscribe over there for those if you're interested. There'll be a link in the show notes. Now, I'm going to be going into quite some depth on some of the topics that are raised by this new syllabus, so this is really going to be a long one. Strap in. But if you'd prefer to go straight to the review on YouTube or read the full review on the website, there will be links in the show notes. Now, if you want to jump to any part of this particular podcast review, there are going to be timestamps again in the show notes so that you can go, you know where to go to if you want to just go to a section that you're most interested in. For a huge amount of teachers, it's just a given that their students will prepare for and enter an ABRSM exam, partly to form clear goals and motivation for students, and partly as an unofficial curriculum. Many teachers encourage their students to progress from beginner all the way to advanced, playing mostly ABRSM pieces, hopping from grade to grade, although many would see this as lazy, uncreative teaching, leaning on ABRSM as a crutch. But this is kind of the reality of how it's used a lot of the time. Now, to understand my reaction to the new books and the new syllabus, I'm going to need to just give you a brief overview of major changes and trends across the major UK music exam boards over the last few years. So in 2019, a representative from LCME wrote the influential article Decolonizing the Music Curriculum, heavily criticizing the lack of diversity in graded music syllabuses and calling for better representation of women and BBIPOC composers, whether that stands for Black, Brown, Indigenous and People of Colour. I'm just going to keep on referring to that as non-white composers from now on. 2020. Criticism of ABRSM's piano syllabus in particular sharpened, including a petition calling for Black composers to be included. Coverage at the time said ABRSM's piano syllabus gave students no opportunity to study works by Black composers, and the issue was widely linked to the broader Black Lives Matter movement of the time. Also 2020, ABRSM launched its Diversity and Inclusion Plan, explicitly aiming to broaden the music it promotes, commissions, and publishes. And then in 2020, ABRSM released a new syllabus shaking up their famous List A, List B, List C categories. So instead of List A being Baroque and contrapuntal, and List B being classical or early romantic sonata-style repertoire, these lists became a bit more functional in a different way. List A now meant faster moving pieces requiring technical agility, while List B meant more lyrical pieces inviting expressive playing. They also reduced the core grade 8 book from 12 pieces to 9, and the amount of printed music in that book, the grade 8 book, fell to roughly half what it had been. Then from 2021 onwards, RSL, as in RSL Rock School, they were the first to launch a classical piano syllabus with an obvious effort to improve representation of women and non-white composers. So in other words, the RSL classical piano syllabus was really the first one that made massive, massive changes in the representation of women and non-white composers. LCME, Trinity and ABRSM all followed suit, generally improving representation in each successive syllabus launch. And then in 2022, Trinity released a new piano syllabus with a radically diverse selection of styles, making it possible for students to take an exam without playing any classical music at all. So, you know, they included lots of things like film music and pop music and video game music and, you know, all kinds of different things. But core classical pieces did stay available in the Trinity syllabus. It's just that you could choose from a whole load of different stuff. And then in 2024, ABRSM released their 2025 to 2026 piano syllabus. That's the previous one, the one that you can still use. Now, although most of the repertoire in lists A and B do remain classical, it was obvious that non-classical music was creeping into list B and sometimes even list A. And I expressed concern about this direction at the time when I reviewed the previous syllabus, noting that in some grades, a student could sit an ABRSM exam playing no classical music. In one grade, it was even possible to play only Nicky Isles compositions and arrangements. Now, I personally do not believe that ABRSM should be allowing students to take exams with only one classical piece or with minimal classical pieces. Not everyone is going to agree with this, but I am going to outline my reasons for this as we go on. So anyway, I got these books almost a month ago, and I had been really apprehensive about the direction that these new books and the new syllabus was going to go in. Would ABRSM continue moving towards more pop, jazz and film music in list A and list B? Or would they pull back and keep non-classical music just only within list C? So when I opened the grade 8 book, I was almost shocked at just how strongly that they seem to have responded to the criticisms of the last grade 8. So people had complained that the standard felt a bit too easy and dumbed down. I think the Rondo a la Turque was a particular grumbling point of a lot of people complaining that it was too easy. Well, you cannot accuse the new grade 8 book of being too easy. This new grade 8 is challenging, and not only technically challenging, but musically challenging. The list A pieces in particular in the book are really substantially demanding options, and the fugue from Ravel's Le Tombeau de Couperin is really musically ambitious. I'll just play that quickly for you. Okay, so this is the fugue subject. And then, and to keep this fugue subject going the whole way through is incredibly tricky, especially when you get nearer the end and they're sort of really overlapping with each other. This is really, really very tricky. Anyway, so it's as if ABRSM said, oh, you thought the previous grade 8 was too easy? Fine, have this. And lists A and B are now almost completely free of non-classical pieces, with one notable exception, a jazz prelude in the alternative list B. I'll just quickly play that here. Now, even that one piece does bother me, because I don't really believe it asks for the same kind of interpretative depth as most of the other list B options. And it does also make it possible to pass grade 8 playing only one classical piece, which could mean, for example, if you were taking a performance exam, you could play three jazz pieces out of four in total. I think this is problematic. But anyway, on the whole, I was incredibly relieved. Gone, for example, was the poorly arranged and unchallenging Studio Ghibli List B piece from the previous Grade 8 book. Instead, all the new Grade 8 List B pieces build up to substantial climaxes and require real emotional depth from the student. So even if I thought ABRSM might have overreacted by suddenly making Grade 8 consistently at the higher end of technical and interpretative difficulty, I was initially reassured that they were moving back to what they've always done best, a core classical foundation with list C used to explore other styles and provide stylistic diversity. That was until I looked at the other grades, and it immediately became obvious that ABRSM are very deliberately committing to a new path of placing sugary, more superficial pieces that are either arrangements of pop or film music, or pieces from a similar commercial sound world, into List B in every single grade book, which is other than grade 8. So, for example, in List B, there's Taylor Swift, and in grade 1, there's Billie Eilish, also in List B. And there's a noticeable creep of these styles into the List B alternative choices. Now, I know that some people are going to ask, well, what's wrong with that? And, well, why shouldn't we make piano exams more enjoyable and more relevant? Or what about students who don't want to play classical music? Now, I've discussed these concerns in previous reviews, but this new syllabus, to me, really makes this issue feel increasingly more urgent. So before I get into these new books, I do want to explain properly why I think that this is a dangerous and unwise direction, and properly make the case for why I think that we should all care about this. So the perception has always been that other examination boards were the easy option, and that APRSM was the respectable, traditional, rigorous option that focused on classical repertoire. The old List A, List B, List C system was respected precisely because it encouraged students to overcome the very common resistance to learning Baroque and classical pieces. If the APRSM piano syllabus drifts away from having classical repertoire at its core, then what does a grade qualification mean exactly? Instead of denoting a classical piano qualification, is it now turning into a general piano performance qualification? And this matters because of ABRSM's massive influence on the music that so many students are introduced to. You know, it's worth asking why we teach anything at all. So, of course, education is partly about teaching skills. We teach children to read, calculate, write, analyze, and think. But more importantly, in my opinion, teaching is about passing on a love of knowledge, of beauty, and the kind of understanding that helps students appreciate cultural riches that they may not yet know how to value. Much of what matters most in education is not instantly accessible. It requires patience, guidance, and nurturing. This is why we teach Shakespeare, for example. You know, we don't teach Shakespeare because every teenager naturally longs to spend an afternoon with Macbeth or King Lear. We teach Shakespeare because the plays are culturally and intellectually rich, because they reward effort, and because many students would never discover their emotional power without being led towards them and being shown how to appreciate them. And the same is true of serious literature more broadly. If we stopped teaching demanding literature because many students might be more interested in graphic novels, we wouldn't just be making education more accessible. We'd be making the next generation culturally poorer. And you know, I'm not saying that this is because graphic novels or blogs or mainstream popular novels are worthless. The point is that some cultural forms already have enormous systems of transmission. Popular culture reaches students constantly through phones and streaming, television, cinema, games, advertising, and social media and the internet in general. It doesn't need institutional educational help to survive and be understood. But classical music is different. Because many people are unlikely to stumble naturally into Bach's Counterpoint or Beethoven's Drama or Chopin's Harmonic Poetry or Debussy's Color World without some kind of patient invitation. And this music often reveals itself most powerfully from the inside. So by learning how to play it, students become familiar with its language, how phrases breathe and how voices interact, how harmony creates tension and release, and how structure carries feeling over time. This familiarity becomes physical and oral and emotional. The student has felt the language under the fingers. And familiarity matters because love often grows from it. So this is one reason why syllabuses matter. They help decide not only what students play, but what they become familiar with. It's about passing on a love for cultural and intellectual riches. It's not just about serving existing tastes. It helps to form new tastes. And this is why ABRSM's role matters. If one of the world's most influential classical music exam boards increasingly gives students the option to move through the grades with only limited contact with the classical tradition, this is not a small matter of repertoire choice. It changes what we're helping to pass on as our cultural heritage. Pop music does not need ABRSM piano exams in order to survive. Classical music arguably does need institutions like ABRSM to help each generation to discover, to understand, and to love it. And ABRSM is not just another exam board. Their choice is traveling to teaching studios, school practice rooms, living rooms, and exam centres across the whole world. You know, ABRSM's reach is enormous. More than 650,000 exams and assessments each year across 93 countries, plus over 1 million music books are sold annually. And with that scale comes an enormous power to shape what students learn, especially because ABRSM grades have come to define what piano progress looks like for so many people. This is why repertoire choices matter. They tell students and teachers and parents what counts as serious study, what traditions deserve time, and what kind of musician the exam is helping to form. ABRSM's historical identity has been built on the classical music tradition, and for generations, its piano exams have been one of the most influential routes by which students around the world encounter that tradition. Given ABRSM's reach, every single syllabus profoundly influences what those students are likely to discover and practice and understand and eventually grow to love. But it's really important for me to emphasize that I am not saying that ABRSM should only focus on white European male composers. ABRSM was rightly criticized in the past for poor representation of women and non-white composers, and I was one of those voices calling for change in previous reviews. Now, to be fair, ABRSM's made real progress here. Recent books, and the new syllabus included, has consistently included well-curated classical pieces by women and non-white composers. Now, I've spoken in a lot of depth in other syllabus reviews about how these debates around diversity and representation formed part of a wider conversation in which some influential voices were calling for the decolonization of music education. Now, if decolonizing a classical syllabus means challenging the narrowness of the traditional canon and showing students that classical music has been written by more than just the familiar names of European white men, I'm absolutely entirely in favor of this. But if it starts to mean treating classical music itself as something to be toned down, displaced, or diluted in order to make the syllabus more diverse, then I think that we've taken a wrong turn somewhere. So classical music certainly has been entangled with issues of privilege, empire, and exclusion. But I would argue that the answer is not to make the ABRSM piano syllabus less classical. Surely the answer should be to increase diversity within the classical music that we teach. So, for example, there's a huge range of barely tapped classical music riches just within Latin American repertoire. Now, to be fair, ABRSM have included some Latin American pieces in this new syllabus, and particularly in grade 7. But given the size and depth of that entire repertoire of Latin American music, it still feels relatively underexplored. Greater representation of music such as this seems to me like a much better way to address calls for the decolonizing of music education, rather than by reducing the proportion of classical music itself. So my concern isn't just about the choices that ABRSM have made in their syllabus, but about where these choices may be leading and how far they might be taken in the future. So is their goal to diversify classical music or to gradually declassicalize the syllabus? So I'm also personally suspicious here and find myself asking if the increasing number of pop, film, and commercial style pieces included in the syllabus could be acting as a convenient way to improve the diversity statistics published in ABRSM's repertoire diversity reports, given that women and non-white composers are much more heavily represented in these contemporary styles than in the traditional classical canon. If this is what's happening, even unintentionally, then I believe that diversity risks becoming a route out of classical music rather than a richer route into it. But there's a much deeper issue here to do with assessment. If ABRSM include classical and popular style pieces inside the same exam structure, they're not just simply offering variety. They're asking the same qualification and marking scheme to certify very different kinds of musicianship. Not only are we trying to compare apples with oranges, we're actually assessing oranges by apple standards. In a notation-based classical piano exam, the skills being assessed are still largely classical ones. So things like accuracy, tonal control, stylistic shaping, balance, phrasing, structural understanding, and fidelity to the score. But many of the skills that make popular musicianship genuinely demanding, such as playing by ear, improvising, using chord symbols, comping, arranging texture, and responding flexibly and shaping from a chart, are barely being tested. Once pop or film music is reduced to a fixed arrangement on the page, it's no longer being examined as authentic popular musicianship. It's now still a classical exam, just with pop branding. And once these popular style pieces are assessed largely on classical exam terms, the comparison becomes really uneven. Two pieces may sit under the fingers at a similar technical level while making really difficult musical demands. So in a notation-based graded piano exam, a pop or a film arrangement will almost always carry a lower density of interpretative, structural, and contrapuntal obligation than a classical work with comparable technical demands. Classical repertoire often requires the student to engage with much higher levels of structural and contrapuntal complexity, harmonic sophistication, motivic development, large-scale architecture, historical stylistic awareness, and the balancing of inner parts and textures. These differences also affect the kind of musical journey the performer has to shape. So most popular music is built around repetition, atmosphere, direct emotional effect, memorable melodic hooks, familiar harmonic loops, and sectional structures such as verse, chorus, bridge, and so on. Classical music, on the other hand, more often unfolds a narrative journey by using more organic forms, utilizing modulation, motivic development, contrapuntal interaction, and heightened tension and release across longer spans. And these differences also then affect emotional expression. So popular music often communicates powerful but comparatively direct emotional states. So longing, uplift, nostalgia, melancholy, heartbreak, and so on. Classical music can be direct as well, and plenty of it is, you know, charming, simple, or, you know, even sugary. But because of the differences in form and development, it usually tends to portray more blended emotional colors. So in classical music, the feelings generally aren't just simply presented, but argued, delayed, transformed, contradicted, turned darker, resolved, or left unresolved. Now, this is why only considering technical difficulties alone is not enough. A pop arrangement might have awkward rhythms and big chords, wide leaps, or a similar number of notes on the page at the same speed, but that does not mean that it carries the same musical burden as a classical piece at the same grade. Now, I can anticipate that a lot of you out there are probably already getting angry and ready to type angry notes in the comments. But so before people get upset, I am not saying in any way that this makes classical music better than popular music. I actually play and teach rock and heavy metal guitar and rock and jazz piano. My life would honestly be utterly incomplete without playing rock music in rock bands. So I have a favorite analogy that I like to use when comparing classical and popular music in this way. Cathedrals can be awe-inspiring marvels of craftsmanship. That doesn't mean I would necessarily want to live in a cathedral. Anyway, so if I've now hopefully persuaded you that classical repertoire really does involve higher levels of interpretative challenge than popular music at a similar technical level, then we have to ask what happens when one candidate takes an exam with a mostly classical program, while another takes the same grade playing mostly pop or film music adjacent pieces. Both receive the same certificate. Is this fair? If the same grade can represent such varying types and levels of musical challenge, then the certificate surely starts to lose its meaning. Teachers, parents, schools and students themselves can no longer assume that grade 6 or grade 8 demonstrates the same kind of musical education and achievement. At this point, ABRSM risk weakening the very thing that made its qualifications valuable: trust in what the grade actually represents. And there's another serious problem with including pop songs. By their very nature, it's usually really challenging to turn them into notated piano music. Vocal lines can be really difficult to pin down to exact pitches on the piano, and rhythms often have to be simplified to make them readable, especially at the lower grades. And this raises an awkward question that other reviewers have brought up in previous reviews of past syllabuses. What happens if a student uses their ear to play more like the original recording and less like the notated version in the grade book? And conversely, if they play the notation accurately, it often doesn't really feel much like the original song at all. And additionally, many pop arrangements just are simply not well carried out, sounding like really clumsy classical versions that strip everything out that gave the original its character, resulting in the piano piece that now doesn't even really work convincingly as either classical or pop. This is a particular danger, as I said, at the lower grades, given the limitations that arrangers face when making a piece technically achievable for students at a lower level. But the problem is often also caused by arrangers who just sound like they're simply not familiar with pop idioms or effective pop piano writing. And there's another commonly overlooked issue. Pop musicologists regularly discuss how texture and timbre have increasingly overtaken harmony and melody as the primary drivers of structure and identity in pop music. Part of this discussion is about how synthesizers, samplers, and doors shifted musicianship away from writing chord progressions and towards sound design, prioritizing the selection and manipulation of textures over traditional notation-centered composition. So many musicologists specifically point out that the identity and aesthetic value of a pop song often cannot be adequately captured by a score-centered model. So in other words, melody and harmony. This means that not every pop song can be turned into a solo piano arrangement convincingly, especially given the restrictions of a graded exam. Trying to shoehorn this transition can betray a fundamental misunderstanding of the essence of pop music. So we've already established that judging the playing of popular styles by the standards of traditional classical music is like assessing oranges by apple standards. But a better path already exists. ABRSM already have a framework for assessing oranges. They have their jazz piano grades, which now cover all the way from grade 1 to grade 8. This is an exam framework which already assesses improvisation and many of the skills associated with popular styles. The lower grades already specifically encourage flexibility and creativity when approaching the written notes on the page, which directly answers the concerns raised in reviews of previous syllabuses by other reviewers about what happens when a student plays a pop song with the original rhythms of the recording rather than the simplified rhythms written on the page. This is exactly the kind of thing that the jazz exams encourage. And the higher jazz grades teach the use of lead sheets, which is a far more practical skill for pianists who are interested in playing pop, jazz, and other popular styles. So if students who are interested in pop styles are assessed only on their ability to read sheet music accurately, I believe that they are far less likely to develop the ability to read lead sheets, improvise, and comp. And I really think that one devastating result of this kind of classical focus is that it doesn't equip these students to be able to jam and form bands with other musicians. ABRSM have stated in their recently launched jazz piano grades 6 to 8 that there's a strong emphasis on skills that allow students to play with other musicians, such as in the context of a jazz trio. So why on earth not build from this framework? Instead of giving students an option to focus mostly on popular styles in these books, while taking what has historically been the classical piano syllabus, why not expand the jazz route into a broader jazz, popular and contemporary piano syllabus? This would make far more musical sense. It could test improvisation, chord symbols, ear-based learning, stylistic flexibility, comping, lead sheet reading, backing track work and arranging. It could honour popular musicianship properly, rather than dilute and ultimately destroy the cultural legacy of ABRSM's classical exams. But I can already guess the answer to this. ABRSM would have to spend considerable resources investing properly in their jazz syllabus, which at the moment remains a niche offering. So the grades 1 to 5 books haven't been updated since 1998. ABRSM would have to commit to recruiting and training more examiners specialised in assessing jazz skills. So I don't believe it would be straightforward to expect traditional classical piano examiners to assess jazz and popular musicianship convincingly, even if they had substantial specialist training. But surely, honouring the real substantial skills that popular styles require by incorporating them into the jazz piano syllabus would be a much more sensible path than by diluting the classical piano exams until they don't successfully assess any style at all. And just but as a brief aside, I'm amazed that so many people put themselves through the boring torture that is ABRSM grade 5 theory to be eligible to take their piano grade exams at the higher levels, when ABRSM grade 5 jazz piano is an accepted alternative. So I regularly encourage my own students to take grade 5 jazz piano instead, because it gets theory into your fingers in a far more practical way. But most people have no idea this is even an option. It's like ABRSM treat their jazz piano exams as the neglected child of the family. Now, I know that not everyone is going to agree with what I'm saying, and that's absolutely fine. And do feel free to have a civilized discussion in the comments if you want. But also, I just want to address some of the likely pushback that there might be for this. So some people might say, but students should be exploring a wide range of styles, including non-classical styles. And in answer to that, I'd say, yeah, that's what List C was for. You know, I'm not suggesting that classical students should not play non-classical pieces at all in an exam, but that there needs to be a balance. The balance of the original List A, List B, List C system was a major part of what helped make ABRSM such a respected brand. And I can imagine a lot of other people asking, yeah, but students are going to quit if they're forced to play classical music. And so, you know, I am not saying, and honestly, please take this in. I am not saying that everybody should be forced to play classical music. This is why I think ABRSM should spend more resources developing their jazz piano exams and possibly, you know, encompass other popular styles within that for students who want other choices. And actually, I personally love the RSL Rock School syllabus, and I regularly encourage my students who are less interested in classical music to take those exams. They're brilliant. But to dilute what has been a traditional classical syllabus feels dangerously like pandering to existing preferences instead of taking our role as educators seriously. And perhaps some people are saying, well, this just sounds really elitist. And, you know, I would say, well, traditionally, many people who learned an instrument are encouraged to take ABRSM exams, which means encountering classical music as a normal part of musical training. But if the syllabus increasingly allows all students to bypass much of this by playing perhaps only one classical piece per exam, my worry is that classical music is going to become less of a shared educational expectation and more of a specialist route for students with stronger cultural, financial, or parental support. So less privileged students may be more likely to take the path of least resistance, while the wealthier students are more likely to have teachers and parents encouraging them through the more challenging classical route. So paradoxically, this could make classical music more elitist, not less. And so another objection might be, yeah, but popular music can be serious too. And so, you know, I would say, well, yes, popular music can be serious. And this is why I'm calling for its inclusion within an exam framework that can examine its real discipline seriously, such as widening the jazz piano syllabus, because classical music exam structures do not properly test popular music skills. A couple of days ago, I was re-listening to a podcast episode that was recorded by Alexis French, who is ABRSM's artistic director. And it brings up, I think, one important question, which could be, who gets to decide what counts as classical? Now, in this podcast episode, he was sort of raising this question, referring to an article about some controversy a few years ago over some musicians' inclusion in classical award categories. I think it was at the Grammys. And he was noticing that they were all black. He asked, does classical music need to be played by certain people in order to qualify as classical? Are we fighting that battle? Now, yeah, this can be an important question, even if I think that that particular example is too nuanced for a simple answer. However, this is where I think that we need to distinguish between a music industry awards category and an ABRSM exam. So awards can test the boundaries of a category, but a graded exam syllabus is doing something different. It's supposed to provide a coherent educational pathway through a musical tradition. So for me, the more important question is, what does it mean to be trained as a classical pianist? A pianist grounded in Baroque, classical, and Romantic repertoire will usually have most of the tools needed to play a piece by Alexis French or contemporary crossover piano music. The reverse is much less likely to be true. So let's now explore the new syllabus. So structurally, not a huge amount has changed. The skeleton arpeggios, sight reading, and oral tests remain the same as the previous syllabus, and the basic distinction between practical grades and performance grades remains unchanged. So just to jog your memory, practical grades are still the in-person exam with pieces, scales, sight reading and oral tests, while performance grades are the online recorded exam built around a four-piece program. Now, ABRSM have allowed for the usual one-year overlap, meaning that you can still use the previous 2025 to 2026 syllabus until the end of 2027, as long as you don't mix it with the new syllabus. ABRSM are also continuing to release their official recordings of the syllabus pieces on streaming platforms such as Spotify, which can be really useful for students and teachers, especially when deciding whether to buy alternative choice sheet music where existing recordings might be rare. But I do find myself having the usual concerns and mixed feelings when listening to the latest batch of recordings. My general impression is that many of the performances come across as over-careful rather than convincingly characterful. As I discuss in every ABRSM syllabus review, they face a genuinely difficult challenge here, finding a balance between a relatively neutral rendition that will sound achievable for most students at that level and an individualistic interpretation filled with flair that would inspire listeners to fall in love with each piece. And I think that this matters because I see teachers and students over and over again in online forums referring to these official recordings as proof of exactly how a piece should be played. Now, ABRSM clearly state in the foreword to the teaching notes booklet, there'll be more on this later, they say, "It is important to say that there is no ABRSM way to play these or any other musical works." Now, I believe that it's a real shame that this very important reminder is hidden away in this separate booklet that reviewers generally acknowledge isn't great value for money and which most people aren't going to own. So if it's so important to say, I wonder why they don't say this anywhere in the books or in the syllabus documents themselves. Anyway, having said that, many of the recordings really are excellent. Dinara Clinton in particular has been doing a lot of heavy lifting across all the grades, mostly doing an excellent job with the tricky balance between giving a neutral, achievable account and adding enough inspirational flair to bring the pieces to life. And I'm also this year really particularly impressed to see some big names in the piano world also contributing to some of the new recordings, such as Danny Driver, Noriko Ogawa, Ronan Ohura, and Joanna McGregor. Amazing. So I'm pleased to see that ABRSM are continuing their conscientious urtext editorial approach at the higher grades. And I took the time to compare the grade A list A pieces against other urtext editions, and they generally stood up to careful scrutiny. At the lower grades, the clearly annotated editorial suggestions do continue to work well. One exception is ABRSM's use of wedge-shaped articulation marks in some lower grade pieces. Now, these markings are not always straightforward historically and do not simply mean play short, play really staccato, in the way many teachers might assume. Now, given that ABRSM have often simplified or removed ornaments at these lower levels to make pieces more accessible, I find it a bit odd that they haven't also editorialized these markings, which so often cause controversy and confusion. Now, so as I mentioned earlier, ABRSM have made a noticeable improvement in recent years concerning representation and diversity in their syllabus. And I took the time to make some comprehensive tables showing how these statistics have developed since the 2019-2020 syllabus. You can find them in the show notes if you'd like to take a closer look. The progress is really obvious when we look at these tables, but if we dig a little beneath the surface, there is a worrying trend towards fewer women composers being represented in classical styles within the books themselves. However, this new syllabus is the strongest so far in terms of representation of non-white composers in classical styles. But I would still like to see more non-white composers represented in historical classical styles from the Baroque era to the early 20th century. It's not that they didn't exist. So, for example, I've already mentioned that there's an enormously neglected treasure trove of Latin American classical music. And for a deeper example, if we drill a bit deeper, I'm a big fan of Mexican classical music, and it's not as if there aren't many pieces by major Mexican composers such as Ponce, Castro, and Chavez that could fit perfectly into an ABRSM syllabus. Now, I did notice that the new grade 7 one-hand choices feature a Mexican composer for the first time, but this doesn't really count for me, bearing in mind that most people will have no idea this option even exists. Now, Mexico is only one country. There's a whole world of similar options such as these. Now, one final point about representation concerns the covers themselves. I'm very much in favour of positive representation, and it's obviously good for exam books to encourage a perception that classical music does not just have to be all about white men. But since the 2023-2024 syllabus, ABRSM's piano books have been using a series of prominently featured children from minority ethnic backgrounds on the covers. This is a tricky line to walk. Done well, it can feel warm, inclusive, and encouraging of diversity. Done badly, it can risk looking more like box ticking than care. Now, this is why I find these covers a bit uncomfortable. Speaking as someone who was a professional photographer, I think this image, this photo, has been quite poorly handled. It's obviously been taken with a very wide-angle lens at almost waist level with bad lighting, and the resulting portrait is unflattering in a way that I think feels careless rather than respectful. If ABRSM want to highlight diversity and inclusion on their covers, they surely have a responsibility to present the image with care. Otherwise, the result starts to feel less like thoughtful inclusion and more like a diversity message being delivered without enough care for the person being used to carry it. Now, because I'm making this review after the launch date, I am aware, looking at what people are saying online about the new syllabus, there's a lot of people who really don't like this cover. And so I hope that it comes across that the detail that I'm talking about why I think the photos don't work well, is because rather than just sort of saying I don't like it, I'm trying to communicate using my eye as a photographer, explaining why this doesn't work. Anyway, let's go on to what's changed in the new syllabus. So there are a couple of new features worth mentioning. The most interesting is the expansion of the one-hand repertoire that I alluded to just before. So the previous syllabus introduced one-hand pieces for grades 1 to 5 in the performance grades, and the new syllabus now extends this all the way from grade 6 to grade 8, so now through all of the grades. This is a really welcome development, broadening access for students with certain injuries or disabilities. Now, it's a shame this option has been presented in quite a confusing way, though. Now, the pieces are only listed in the performance grades syllabus PDF. Now, I was a bit confused why they weren't also listed in the practical grade syllabus until I realised that you'd need two hands to play the scales and for sight reading. Okay, so the problem is, though, that unless you read the online performance syllabus PDF carefully, it would be really easy to just completely miss them. None of them are listed in any of the books, and the official recordings don't include any of them. Now, another new feature in the printed books is the inclusion of QR codes above the pieces, linking to supplementary video tutorials and performances, along with extra information to help with the pieces in the books. And this is just for the pieces in the books, not the alternative choice pieces. All these performance videos feature top-down camera views of the keyboard, which could be a genuinely useful resource to help with tricky fingerings not marked in the score. This does raise the tricky question of whether teachers may still want to buy the separate teaching notes booklet, which is £11.50 at the moment, which also only just covers the pieces in the books. It might seem difficult to justify buying this book because the online resources now generally provide at least as much detailed guidance that's in the booklet. And the booklet, as always, gives you just three short paragraphs per piece. Anyway, now getting to the pieces, the most important bit that you all probably want to know about. So what are the new pieces actually like? So grade 8 is where we see the most obvious difference compared to the previous syllabus, with what looks like a massive overcorrection to criticisms that the previous grade 8 book was basically too easy for this level. Well, there's no chance of that this time round. And I personally also find it interesting to note that all three list A pieces in the book are individual movements of works which are in the ARSM diploma syllabus. That's the first exam that you would take once you've done your grade 8. It's the first diploma that you do afterwards. So I don't think this is a coincidence. So, for example, you've got Italian concerto, first movement. You can do the whole Italian concerto, and then you've got the Beethoven Pathétique that you can go on to do the entire piece once you've learned the third movement. And it also gives you the option of learning several movements from Ravel's La Tombe de Couperin. So I'm guessing that ABRSM are hoping that having got one of these List A pieces under your belt, you might then be tempted to take their first diploma with that entire piece. And if you watch the tutorial video for the Ravel Fugue, it is in fact mentioned that you might want to go on and learn more movements from Tombeau de Couperin for an ARSM diploma. So grade 8 looks like it's been whipped into shape as a serious stepping stone towards the serious classical diplomas. But when I look at the books below grade 8, I am immediately confused by ABRSM's direction. So how come one sugary, popular style piece is being very obviously and deliberately placed into every other grade book, with similar pieces also creeping into the List B alternative options? Yet grade 8 is structured as a serious classical stepping stone to a diploma without this kind of diluting. So to be clear, the majority of List A and List B pieces still have a mostly classical core, and List A has been tightened up a little bit since the previous syllabus so that you don't get so many non-classical pieces popping up. So gone, for example, is the odd situation where it was possible to take one grade exam playing only Nicky Isles arrangements and compositions across List A, B and C. This is not yet a syllabus that has abandoned classical music. But the problem is that even a few non-classical pieces creeping into List B can be enough to let a student take an ABRSM exam choosing to play only one classical piece. And for those taking a performance exam, this means that only one out of four pieces has to be classical. Could this create a bit of a shock for some students with little classical experience when they then get to grade 8? So my impression is that ABRSM seem pulled in many directions and are tentatively trying to please everybody in a slightly indecisive way. Now, that said, I do want to be fair. The pieces on the whole are chosen well, There are loads of enjoyable discoveries here, and some grades contain some really genuinely excellent finds. I don't want this review to give the impression that I opened the books and found nothing but horror, sugar, and marketing dust. There is plenty here that teachers and students will enjoy, and many pieces that I am going to enjoy teaching. However, one consequence of the decision to put accessible, popular-style pieces into List B in the books is a noticeable lack of romantic and early 20th century repertoire across most of the books. So the alternative choices partly compensate for this, but the books themselves are what most teachers and students will encounter first, and not everybody can afford extra books. Now, I wonder if most teachers would have chosen to trade romantic repertoire for accessible contemporary genres willingly. Who knows? Now, although List A choices are generally successful across most grades, I did have some concerns about a few individual grades. So, for example, I was playing a couple of List A pieces by some big name composers and wondering to myself why they were so dreadful and dull. Let me just play you one of those now. This is by Mozart. This is a minuet in F by Mozart. So, you know, reading through all the books and here I am going... It's okay. Anyway, I then discovered that they were written by tiny children. So, for example, this piece was written by Mozart when he was aged just 6. And there was a Polonaise by Chopin when he was aged 7. So, you know, to me, that just feels emblematic of a problem with a few grades suffering from uninspired and stodgy List A choices. So, maybe this is just subjective personal taste. Maybe it's just me. So, you know, I'd be interested to hear your opinions if you want to leave some comments on this. Now, another issue that jumped out at me as I played through the higher grades was what I felt was a substantial and noticeable increase in the requirement for large hand stretches. I took some time checking this against the previous syllabus, and the increase in awkward or wide stretches does seem to be real and consistent, including more pieces requiring stretches of over an octave where I felt it might not be possible to redistribute the hands or spread the notes convincingly. This is obviously going to cause problems for younger students and for many girls and women, making a lot of the pieces in some of the books unrealistic options and making them less good value for money. Now, having said that, I was interested to hear the official recordings on Spotify where Dinara Clinton, who I mentioned earlier, seems to have small enough hands that many of the ninths and tenths have to be spread. And she does a really good job of making them sound convincing. But there is a difference between a major international competition winning concert pianist spreading tricky intervals and somebody taking an ABRSM exam. Now, I just couldn't help feeling that somebody stopped considering hand sizes when choosing the new repertoire selections. So I think it's also important to look at the quality of the books. And I did have some concerns about some worrying slips in standards concerning typesetting and engraving. In my reviews of previous syllabuses, I've regularly called attention to moments where rhythmic notation was arranged and spaced in what could be confusing ways. Now, teachers and professional musicians may be less sensitive to this spacing when they're reading music, but I do notice that students are frequently thrown by poor typesetting of rhythms. Another regular concern is that it's common for me to identify several misprints each time I read through a new set of ABRSM gradebooks. But I had praised the most recent 2025-2026 syllabus for fixing these issues. That past the most recent past syllabus really had consistently high quality editing with no misprints jumping out at me. I had been hoping that this was going to be a permanent eradication of these problems. So it's a shame that I'm noticing some of these rhythm typesetting issues starting to creep back across the books. Now, it's not as bad as it used to be, but it's still bad enough to catch my eye in most books. Now, I will leave some examples in the show notes if you want to check these out. And the new books are mostly free of misprints, except for The Waltz Caprice in grade 8. Now, funnily enough, when you click on the QR code and watch the relevant tutorial, the teacher describes the harmonic vocabulary of this piece. And the harmonic features that he talks about are exactly why I could hear that there were misprints. And I double-checked this by listening to a historical recording. These misprints have also made their way into ABRSM's official recording. There are also other minor typesetting issues with this piece, but also, much more importantly, an absolutely impossible metronome marking, making me wonder what on earth happened with this one piece. Anyway, so what are all the different options? What does this mean for anyone who wants to take a piano exam? So ABRSM remain a reasonable choice for students not primarily looking for a certificate that represents solid classical mastery, which was always traditionally the point of ABRSM exams. So there's now a certain level of identity confusion. So for students who have one foot in classical repertoire and another foot wandering into other styles, this syllabus could be a good opportunity to explore and have fun with lots of fresh, interesting new music from different genres. Working towards an ABRSM exam could still be useful to help motivate students playing classical repertoire, as long as they don't mind that the certificate may no longer convey the same level of achievement in the classical music world that it once did. But those same people are definitely going to want to check out the Trinity syllabus, which not only has an enjoyable, solid core of traditional classical repertoire, but also what I would consider a much stronger selection of pieces in popular genres such as pop, jazz, game and film music and so on. So if you want to focus on the usual rigorous classical repertoire, you absolutely can, but you also can play purely non-classical styles for an entire exam if you want to. Trinity also offers two sets of supporting tests focusing either on classical or popular music skills. And their books are better value for money. They come in standard and extended editions. The standard books are a little bit cheaper than ABRSM's and contain 12 pieces per book as compared with ABRSM's 9. But if you spend a little bit more for the extended editions, then you get a massive 21 pieces per book. And I absolutely loved these books when I reviewed them. Now, I did include some tables at the end of the review where you can compare all the costs of the books and the exams between all of the different examination boards that I'm discussing here. For those who want exam certificates that demonstrate a more rigorous and solid classical attainment level, LCME would be the best bet. They've recently released a brand new syllabus, which I will be reviewing soon. And for those who are absolutely not interested in classical music, now, although Trinity is a strong option because you can conveniently sidestep all of the classical repertoire, I would also really recommend RSL Rock School and ABRSM Jazz exams. Now, what I particularly like about the Rock School exams is the emphasis on playing along with backing tracks, which does a really good job of tightening up students' rhythms. I sometimes encourage even my classical students to look at these exams as a way of tightening up their rhythmic weaknesses. And the ABRSM Jazz exams are really great for students interested in learning to improvise. And grade 5 jazz piano is a much more fun alternative to grade 5 theory. So, final verdict. There's a lot to love about this syllabus, with loads of fresh new discoveries and mostly well-curated pieces that are full of character that I'm really going to enjoy teaching. After accusations of dumbing down and making some of the grade 8 pieces too easy the last time around, ABRSM seem to have reacted sharply by making it consistently more challenging than usual. Now, perhaps one contributing factor may be that the list day choices are an obvious sign that ABRSM are hoping students are going to use these pieces as a springboard for their ARSM diploma. But look further down at the other grades and it's very clear that there's been a deliberate decision to add enticing, sugary, non-classical pieces into List B, including one in each book below grade 8. Now, while some might argue that it can only be a good thing to offer students enjoyable choices that feel more relevant to ears that are used to contemporary popular music, I've laid out many arguments earlier in this review as to why I personally think that this is a problematic direction for ABRSM and for all of us in general. I'm not saying that every student must be marched through classical repertoire under candlelight while a bust of Beethoven judges them from the mantelpiece, but I do believe that as many people as possible should be encouraged to explore the world of classical music. There's been so much talk about making music education more in touch with younger generations and rejecting the problematic colonial tradition of classical music. My concern is that by diluting classical exams, we may be accelerating a widespread educational stance that treats historical tradition as something that's dead, rigid, and no longer relevant. But from my perspective, tradition is a deep well of living, evolving riches, and we risk becoming cultural orphans if we unwittingly cut ourselves off from it. Now, I will be releasing a future review where I'm going to be looking at all of the individual grades, so do subscribe to my podcast on your platform of choice if you'd like to know about that. Or you could subscribe to my YouTube channel, because there that will also let you know when that comes out. Plus, there will be tutorials and performances of all the grade 8 pieces in the new book that I'm going to be putting onto YouTube very shortly. So do subscribe, click on the bell icon of any videos there and so on to know when those videos are going to come out. Now, by the way, I do currently have a few spaces in my studio for online piano students. So there is a contact form on my website, heartofthepiano.com. There'll be a link in the show notes if you're interested. So otherwise, go and do some more practice, or go listen to some of my other podcast episodes, or go watch some of my YouTube videos. Take care and goodbye.